Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the KER Report. We're going to be devoting normally one segment to Dr. Charles Page. It's going to be an optimistic segment. Today we're going to do two because I want to open up with Charles for the special New Year show. Going to give him segment one and segment two. If you have any questions at all, by the way, and obviously that includes you, Larry, or anybody, just voice the questions in the blog and I will make sure. And Chuck goes over the blog pretty religiously also, so we will make sure that those questions are answered. We're going to get really, really, really interactive this year. Chuck, in your book, A Spoonful of Courage for the Sick and Suffering, which is an excellent book, by the way, if anybody else wants a copy, just let us know, and I'm sure Chuck can give you one. I've given away about 30 copies. Anyhow, I want to talk about your chapter 26, Chuck. It's kind of a refreshing way to start the year. It's entitled How Not to Deliver a Baby, Courage on Keeping Perspective. Tell us about that chapter, will you, Chuck?
Well, you know, Al, we call it the practice of medicine, you know? And it's probably what patients don't like to hear, but I'll just never forget my first day of calling medical school. You know, I was at the Bentob Hospital in Houston, which is with a major trauma center, and I was delivering babies.
Yeah.
And I had never delivered a baby before. Fortunately, this lady had never had one.
Oh,
and
wow.
So, you know, in medical school, you kind of learn to fake it until you make it. And so I was in that process of, you know, kind of faking it, you know, acting like I knew things that I didn't know and that I could do things that I couldn't do. And anyway, this lady came in, and it was her first baby, and she was, of course, anxious, but yet excited. And, you know, I was probably more anxious and even more excited than she was because I'd never delivered a baby before. So anyway, so we're going through the process of waiting for her to, you know, go into labor, and I'm following this lady. And finally, she starts to have her baby, and she takes her back to we wheel her back to this kind of this room. You know, there is no doctor. It's me as the medical student delivering this baby, and there's a delivery nurse, and she's screaming, and, you know, and I'm there ready to catch the football, and, you know, it begins to come down the pike, and she begins to scream and wail, and you know, my heart begins to race, and my palms get sweaty, and, you know, of course, the nurse in the back is kind of, yeah, she's been there and done this before, and she's just kind of yawning in the back. And here it is. I'm realizing in the moment that, man, this is it. I'm fixing to deliver my first baby, and I'm so pumped. And all of a sudden, you know, there's a big gush of fluid. And as the baby begins to come down the pike, it seems like I began to go backwards, and it's like I was going in this black tunnel. And so
now it's down the pike, Charles. That's a medical term, right?
Well, after this, you're going to realize that I failed my OB-GYN rotation.
There you go.
That's why I didn't become an obstetrician. But anyway, it's funny. I woke up and I had this dull pain in the top of my head, and I realized that I was there. I was there in the gurney beside the patient. The patient was looking at me, kind of wondering if something was wrong with her baby, and she didn't know that she just had a rookie there delivering her baby. But I had passed out, and they had put me in the gurney and put me there in the recovery room with the patient. And you know, it's kind of one of those moments, probably one of the most embarrassing moments in my life as a medical student. You know, you're trying to, you know, be competent and show people that you know what you're doing. And, but in that whole situation, now in retrospect, I can laugh at it a lot. And I really feel like, you know, Al, one of the things we need to learn in life is just to learn to laugh at ourselves. I think we just take ourselves too seriously. You know, I've never seen anyone die of laughter,
you know,
but I've seen a lot of people get really, I mean, we know it's a COVID crisis going on now. There's so many people that are just, they're lonely, and they're in a sense dying of loneliness,
right,
and sadness. So learn to laugh at ourselves, even in this crazy time we're dealing with. You know, interesting, you know, when we laugh at ourselves, it releases endorphins and lowers our stress, improves our mood. There's even some studies that show that laughing boosts our immune system, you know, and it relaxes our muscles, increases our resilience, helps with our heart health and blood pressure, and of course, anger and anxiety, all those things. And so, you know, I just want to encourage people to find something to laugh about over the holidays. You know, the Bible talks about how a cheerful heart is good medicine.
That's right.
You know, but a crushed spirit dries up the bone. And I think so often we forget that in our society, especially in the media nowadays. It seems like the media wants us so much to focus on things that make us anxious and things that make us angry and things that make us fearful. And, you know, just going back and just learning just to take everything in perspective. I think that's one of the things that we're missing nowadays.
You know, Chuck, I got to tell you, I typically try to watch the local news every night because it comes out of Seattle. And one thing that I learned watching the local news and also reading, quite frankly, the Drudge Report, what Drudge is now doing, and it seems like almost what the local news is doing, is they are imitating a periodical called the National Enquirer. There is nothing, no, honest to God, man, there is nothing, there's nothing thought-provoking anymore in the news. It's all about somebody in Kent, Washington, you know, fell under a car, you know, and that killed him, and on and on and on. I think people enjoy that kind of stuff. And now I have to tell you, sir, I understand why the National Enquirer is such a hot-selling publication. You know, they put it at the checkout stand in the grocery stores up here in Paradise, and I got to tell you, I am amazed that anybody buys that. But that's exactly what the Drudge Report is today, and it's sad, but you know, that's what that is what is causing sales. And I don't mean decreases in prices. I mean that's increasing sales revenue for Drudge, et cetera, et cetera. And I find that to be really a shame. You know, I want to talk about one other thing, because we're going to do one more segment here. I want to talk about something that I think is very serious. And I know some people may disagree with me, and that's fine. I mean, my God, I've now gotten a rapport going, at least with Irish Tony, where we're chatting off, you know, off mic via Skype on the air once a week. He's really a great guy. But I got to tell you, Dr. Page, I want to talk a little bit about the COVID inoculations, immunization, I guess.
Yep.
I have to say. And I'm simply going to relate some experiences I've had up here with some of my doctor buddies up here. Now, with the exception of one couple, all of my buds up here are retired, and they don't even, you know, they're rather reticent to even talk about medical issues anymore. But, you know, you get to know them pretty well, and you get them to get a couple of beers in them, and they really just start opening up, for lack of better terms. And I think that in the next segment, which is pretty short, it's only 8 minutes and 15 seconds, I want to say one final thing about COVID. And I don't want to make anybody angry. I just want to say the conclusion that I've come to, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe that's the conclusion that you've also come to. I want to stress, because I believe you and I have talked about this off mic at length.
Yep.
I don't think you're recommending it necessarily for anybody. I think that you are saying it's a very, very personal decision. And that's a philosophy I want to talk about, Chuck, and nothing else other than that. Ladies and gentlemen, hang around. About 10 seconds from now, we're going to go into a commercial, and then we're going to come back with Dr. Charles Page, a good guy. Any questions, by the way, in the future, you let us know what they are for Chuck.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Okay, back chatting with Dr. Charles Page, author of many, many books. The one I'm looking at right now, which holds a place of honor on my desk, is entitled A Spoonful of Courage for the Sick and Suffering. I want to talk a little bit about the personal decision that's involved in the COVID situation. I have been told by medical doctors, specifically at the Dialysis Institute, that, Al, you really ought to get the immunization because of Kathy. The alternative, if you get sick, of course, is terrible. But the fact of the matter is, you know, you've got a very, very, very serious situation on our hands. We kind of recommend that you take a chance and go ahead and get the vaccine. And I believe, Kathy, just because of the policies at the DaVita Dialysis Center, is probably going to have to take it also. It is a very personal decision. Would I take it if I wasn't married to the little blonde lady? No, I don't think I would. I agree with Dr. Ron Paul. I mean, you know, I also agree, seriously, because I know a lot about the statistics surrounding COVID. I'm not sure that immunization is really necessary at this moment in time. I think common sense is very necessary. How about you, Chuck? What do you think?
Well, first of all, I took the vaccine. And, you know, as a healthcare provider, I'm exposed to COVID every day.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of things you have to put into that equation. I mean, I think, first of all, as you mentioned, it is a personal decision. I don't think anybody can make you take the vaccine. And so you have to weigh the risk and benefits. And that's the whole kind of process that you have to go through. Like, for example, for you as a caregiver taking care of your wife, if you get sick, it, you know, it brings a whole different dynamic, not only for you, but for your wife. And
you have to
put all those things in your equation. For me, I have 6 employees. I have, you know, 7 family members. I have a father who's 80, who's at high risk. And so I felt like it was the right thing. I tell you what was more scary for me. I had 3 hospital administrators calling me wanting to give me the vaccine. I'm not worried about the vaccine. I was worried about the administrators and what they were going to put in it. It probably took cyanide out of it for me, you know. So, you know, for doctors, we kind of I think I'm going to go out and die in the woods if I get sick, because there's a lot of nurses that want to get a hold of me. But honestly, you got to think about all these things. You got to weigh the risk and benefits. I mean, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories going around, and after studying those conspiracy theories, I don't think there's a lot of science with those. There's a lot of myth. First of all, this is an mRNA virus, and it does not incorporate into your DNA, into your genome. That would be like the 1 in a million kind of jumping gene kind of exception if that were to happen. What this mRNA does, there's a process called transcription and translation, where in the cytoplasm of the cell, this mRNA, it's a precursor to the protein.
Yeah.
And it goes in your body. Your ribosomes take the mRNA and make the protein, and then your body distinguishes it as foreign and develops an immune response. And that's the difference with this vaccine. The only difference is the precursor to the protein. What we've always done in the past is we've always just developed the protein and then injected the protein. But this was a faster way of doing it, and that's one of the reasons why the vaccine came out so much quicker. But, you know, so that fallacy that, you know, the RNA is going to somehow get into your genome and cause infertility or be chimeric or whatever is really, there's not a lot of science behind that. The other concern is that, you know, possibly some of the hydrocolloid that's used, I mean, they're going to use this to trace you and whatever. I mean, to be honest with you, I know I'm a little bit skeptical, but I believe they're already tracing us with our cell phones. So, you know, if you really want to kind of, you know, start being paranoid, turn your cell phone off and turn your media off, and I think you'll be better off. But I don't think there's that kind of technology out there. If you think about the metals in your body that we already have, you know, the iron in our body, it's going to be really hard for them to be able to trace this, and I don't think they have the technology to do that. So, you know, it's one of those things, you have to weigh the risk and benefits. There are some risks. I mean, you know, we're seeing some people that are having some seizures and people that are having kind of a Bell's palsy type phenomenon, but those are very rare. Most people have kind of flu-like symptoms. I really haven't had any symptoms at all except for some arm pain. And so, you know, I think if you're high risk, you know, if you're the age of 70, 80 years old, and if you have other medical problems, or if you're a caregiver, you need to weigh all those things into the equation, you know, because we know that, you know, half of the deaths, half of the mortality is people that are age 80. And so, you know, if you're getting to be that age, you may want to consider that. I mean, that doesn't mean, I mean, there are exceptions. There are people that are 90 years old that get the virus and they don't have any problems.
Right.
That's the whole uncertainty with this. And so do you really want to roll the dice? You know, I really think if you're weighing the risk and the benefits and you've really studied, you know, I think you're going to realize that the benefits are going to outweigh the risk for most people. There's other people that don't need to take it at all. If you're young and healthy, don't take it.
You know, the comment that I would make is I think what my friends who are my listeners, I think what concerns them more than anything else, and, you know, we'll get comments on this. You know, Larry, give me your comments for sure, all of you guys. I want to say I think the thing that bothers our listeners more than anything else is the fact that the government could step in and say, you know, baby, if you don't take the immunization, you can't go out in public, you can't go to movie theaters, you can't get on airplanes, et cetera, et cetera. I would hate to see that kind of government control.
Well, and you're right, and we all have that kind of fear, and I agree. I mean, that is a possibility.
Yep.
We have to, you know, we have to protect our freedoms. I mean, and that's one of the things, you know, that I think, you know, is happening in some places, and we have to, you know, we have to be diligent about, you know, standing up. I mean, in so many ways now, because if we don't, you know, we're not going to, you know, they're going to take our freedoms away.
You know, I got to tell you, of course they are. And I wanted to say one other thing. We've got about a minute here, Chuck, but I don't like the attitude of politicians today in most cases. I was watching Joe Biden last night on the news. He was very, very angry. You know, Trump was totally unconciliatory when he was in office. And I think I've told our listeners before, I think that's a terrible mistake. You know, the old simple adage, you can attract more bees with honey than you can with anything else, I think is something that people absolutely need to realize. Ladies and gentlemen, all the questions you want for Chuck that doesn't put him in any legal liability, please let us know. Remember one thing. Chuck is a good friend. He's a good man. He has more in common with any of you than you might even come close to imagining. He is a believer in Jesus, as I am. We also both are firmly convinced that Judeo law is an important thing to follow for Jews also. And having said everything like that, just, you know, I have welcomed Chuck with open arms to this show. He's going to be a major part of it, and you know why? Because he is a good guy. Going to be right back with some opinions on 2020.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Irish, Tony, especially you. At least you have the courtesy to talk on the phone with me. I got to tell you, if any of you guys out there ever want to chat on the phone, Irish, Tony, and I do it now via Skype. Very, very interesting conversations. He is a very interesting man. Tony, you're not going to get this because this is not going to air until Saturday morning or late Friday night, but I'm going to call you again tonight. I've got my friend Jim McKinney on the line with me. Jim is our Encyclopedia Britannica when it comes to political issues. We're going to kind of wrap up the crap that happened in 2020, and we're going to make some predictions for 2021. You know, it was interesting. I was reading the paper this morning, obviously, and some of the cartoons pertaining to 2020 are really interesting. all things considered, it could not have been much of a worse year, both medically and also politically. Jimmy, you want to start wrapping it up and I'll just jump in?
Sure, you bet. And let's hope that 2021 is better. Unfortunately, I'm afraid that, you know, there's always that possibility that things can get worse. I hate to say it, but it is possible. We could actually go farther down the hole. But I'm going to be optimistic and hope for the best. We started off 2020 with one of the most roaring economies in American history and in global history. We were doing phenomenal. And, you know, black unemployment, Hispanic unemployment, opportunity zones, such fantastic opportunities. Corporate taxes were making American companies more competitive on the global market. The Chinese were reeling a bit because of Trump policies with specified tariffs, and we looked pretty good. And then the COVID crisis hit, along with also, if we don't want to forget, the impeachment over the false allegations of a Ukrainian an attempt by Donald Trump to use politics to impugn Hunter Biden for the election. Crazy how things have turned around, isn't it, Al?
Well, it really is crazy. I am amazed, quite frankly. And, you know, we're not done yet. There's a lot of talk about some very, very serious action, potential action going to take place on the 6th of January on the part of the Republicans. And I'd like to chat about that a little bit. But I got to tell you, I don't want to make anybody angry as I have in the past. But I have to say what I believe, and I firmly believe that the election was not a fair and honest election. I wonder how the Republicans can get some investigation into this. Is it even feasible at this point, Jim, in your opinion? I don't know.
So there will be, there's no question. Half of America is not comfortable with what happened in this election. There, you know, we know that rules were changed because of the lockdowns, because of COVID. We know that there was massive amount of votes in just four or five, maybe six key counties that actually shifted the entire election after midnight, of election night, which is extremely unusual. We know that people stopped counting votes. That really does not create trust and faith in the system.
No.
So will we have investigations? If the Democrats come forward and Joe Biden is actually, you know, finally on the 6th through the Electoral College chosen to be the president-elect and then inaugurated in the 20th of January,
right,
we will see a continued push to question what happened from a large segment of the population. The problem is the major mainstream media sources that have actually kind of covered up any potential accusations will continue to do that. And of course, I think a lot of that is driven by tech interests and global corporate interests because they think they can buy their way into the Biden administration.
I want to tell you, Jimmy, I disagree with you to a certain extent. I agree, but I disagree on one issue. I am firmly convinced that the Chinese are 100% behind this thing. When I say I'm firmly convinced, it's in their best interest for Joe Biden to be the president. He's a crook. He's turned into a crook, which is too bad. I saw him on the news last night. He is now getting very angry at the press and yelling at the press. I saw that last night when a member of the press asked him about his son. He turned around and walked away and made some derogatory remarks about this particular reporter just being a one-trick pony. Couldn't he talk about something important? Well, hell, I agree. You know, somebody really screwed up when they brought up Hunter, when they brought Hunter Biden in. I don't want to say into this world, but he was not brought up with any kind of moral values whatsoever. The man, I think, is very, very insecure. If you look at the family background, I would say that proves it. Number one. Number two, you know, I got to tell you, I don't disavow prophets. I never have and I never did, but I disavow dishonest prophets. I was in business for 40 years. I had plenty of opportunity to take advantage of that, and I couldn't do it. Biden Sr. and Biden Jr. very definitely did it, in my opinion. And that's not an opinion. I believe that's a fact, and I could argue that with anybody.
Well, I'll tell you what Hunter Biden does is he represents a level of privilege and two tiers of justice in America that Americans are absolutely infuriated over and frustrated with. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. People are tired of, if you're inside in the Beltway and if you have a powerful father or parent, you're protected. But the rest of us suffer through the basics of the law. And I think there's a tremendous amount of frustration. And I think it's not going to go away. And no matter how long Joe Biden tries to push it away and how much eventually the media's still got to make money. So they're going to go ahead and investigate this because without that, they certainly can't just, you know, go along and get the clicks and the advertising they need to survive if they try and, you know, cakewalk the Joe Biden administration. So this is going to get, it's going to get very interesting if he does succeed on the 6th.
What I think is going to be interesting is how far are the Republicans going to, or the Democrats going to let it go? And how far are the Republicans going to push it? When you have 50% of the country that is seriously questioning the results of an election, you got to take it to the limit.
Yeah, well, and I'll tell you, if the allegations of fraud and massive voter fraud are true, then the reality is the Democrats actually don't have the votes that they thought they did.
Correct.
And what the media is saying. And we can see by the House of Representative results how much of a difference there was between that. It doesn't make much sense. Statistically, it does not make much sense that the Republicans did so well in so many races around the country, but then Trump was beaten by a guy that got more votes than Barack Obama, who was a plagiarizer, who's 77 years old, who can barely complete a sentence, who really, you know, is being protected completely in this process. How did he get 81 million votes? It's quite surprising. So the reality is, I really don't think there's that many Americans that support him. And I think there, as the truth becomes more clear on the corruption issues that you're talking about, that's actually going to be even more devastating to him because the media can't cover it up. They just can't cover it up forever. And I think that's going to be a big problem if, in fact, we go through. And that's why I'm concerned about 2021 continuing with this type of complete undermining of institutions and faith and trust in the U.S. Constitution.
Well, America today, politically anyway, America is definitely not America. And I had a very interesting week that I'm going to get into just a little bit after the break. We had to take a commercial break just for a second, Jimmy. As you know, 925 is coming up. And I want to say that I'm not angry. I am just very, very disappointed, and I applaud what Mitch McConnell is doing right now. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. I'm going to be right back with Jim McKinney. Hey, welcome back. Second segment here to wrap up KER Politics. I want to stress one thing that a lot of you have agreed with me on, and that is, as a result of this election, boy, you talk about Russian influence in the past. This has got to be serious Chinese influence right now. The Chinese do not want Donald Trump back in power. If he gets back in power, the Chinese are going to have to curtail some of their shenanigans. Jimmy, you want to opine on that?
Yeah, so what we've seen with, you know, the Trump administration is a very strong national security view that China is a major threat. And because of that, China has used every amount of influence and economic power and actually military threats in order to intimidate both U.S. allies and attempt to undermine the Trump administration. They've infiltrated major corporations. We have a lot of information now about how many Communist Party members are actually involved in major corporate boards and advisors, and actually in the U.S. government. And that's just from one list of people from Shanghai Communist Party members that was leaked actually in 2016, but just came out recently, or has been highlighted more recently. We have a country, a Chinese country, that's run 1.4 billion people being dictated by one premier and a Chinese Communist Party leadership that is basically 200 people controlling all of them. There's no such thing as democracy there. There's social control. There's military control. There's complete clampdown on speech. And they are trying to expand and dominate not only the Pacific region, but as well global economics. And if allowed to, will increase their military capacity to dominate the world. They will dictate terms of the future, completely erasing Western ideologies and Western, you know, liberalism. And the sad part is that corporate America has bought into it for a short-term advantage, and they're willing to sell out in order to support their short-term profits because of how well the Chinese have infiltrated every aspect of our society. So do they want Donald Trump in office? Heck no, they do not. And they will do anything to continue to gain their power. And it's not, and it's clearly because they do, the people do not have a say in that. It's run by the powerful, a very powerful elite that are getting massively rich and want to ensure a continuation of their policies in their future because they think, well, for their own interests, and they think they're right.
Well, you know, when you read history, which you and I both have, you look at the ups and downs of societies, you know, over hundreds of years period, and I have to tell you, the Chinese at one time were very definitely, sorry, I got a frog in my throat, you guys out there, big frog. Anyway, the Chinese have been a major, major power in the past. They have a very interesting philosophy. America has been a major power for a little bit under 200 years. And you know what? It wouldn't surprise me if the pendulum is going to start swinging the other way. What do you think about that one? That's a pretty scary statement, but it's a pretty thought-provoking statement.
Oh, I think it's a very, very astute statement. You know, in the length of history, we are an aberration of republic and a democratic values that started 250 years ago, that evolved from these different ideas and thoughts, and really have established the principles for how most people are judged in the world now.
Yeah.
But that pendulum is swinging back as authoritarians gain more power. And the truth is, throughout history, authoritarians and monarchs, powerful elite have controlled most of history and most of mankind. Our experiment is really being tested right now. And I agree with you that if we continue down this road, we'll be a blip in history. And we do not need that. We do not want that. The American experiment is very important for the future of mankind. And that's why I'm so strongly supporting the ideologies that continue to promote free speech and independence. And,
I don't disagree at all. You know, the thing that bothers me is something that my friend Jay Taylor was told by an economics professor that he had back at university. He said that whenever you don't have a sound dollar, okay, a dollar backed by something that is concrete, economies have failed. Well, right now, we don't have a sound dollar. We're going to be talking a lot more about that in 2021. But number two, what we don't have that really bothers me, Jim, is we have no sound moral values anymore by the majority of the people, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs when people, when you lose faith in something bigger than yourself and you start to look at, whatever it takes, the ends justify the means. And unfortunately, I see the Democratic Party, many members of the senior leadership of the Democratic Party have chosen that route, and they've lost a moral compass. Yep. because they don't believe in a higher power. And I think as we expand this secularism, we take away those basic moral values, we're really losing not only our youth, but our future as well.
I don't think there's any question about that. You know, the one thing I have to say about the people on our site who are very active, CFS, Eddie Ebelon, Irish Tony, Bonzo, Out of the Box Jerry, Glenn with two N's, who's a neighbor of ours, Jimmy, Matthew, Larry, Nora Real, 1968, pardon me, and of course all of the very valuable input that you're providing. People ought to listen to this, listen to what all these folks have to say, because you know what? They care about America. Some of them perhaps can be a little exuberant, but I can be a little exuberant too. And all I want to say is thank you, bloggers, listeners. You care about the country. And after talking with Irish Tony a couple, three days ago, I have to tell you, he's a man with principle. He's not an idiot. He's a man with principle, a very successful man. That's the type of people that make up our blog, I guess I have to say. I hate to use the word blog. That doesn't sound particularly sophisticated, but darn, we get some really good views out of this, Jimmy. And I have to tell you, I think all of us, you and I, Laura, are rightfully concerned. I am amazed at other people who aren't really concerned with what's going on. Any comments on that?
It is shocking to me how quickly people have succumbed to propaganda from the media and fear and intimidating and yelling at each other over where they're wearing a mask or not. I mean, and how quickly 200 cities around America were burned and destroyed and looted without many of the leaders in those cities stepping up to stop that violence. This is just unparalleled, in my view, since 1860. And we've faced many challenges before, but this again, when you lose the moral compass and you lose the moral values of what this stands for, people twist and turn for their political gain. And there are so many people that are just uneducated both on history and what this means and their own free speech that they're undermining by telling someone else that they, calling something hate speech they don't like. How quickly could that turn on them? And that's what's so disturbing is in our media and our journalists that are failing to actually question those assumptions and question those propaganda dialogue, if not perpetuating them. That's what's disturbing.
I think the barometer that's going to be really interesting to watch for you and I, quite frankly, Jim, given where we live, I think it's going to be very interesting to watch and see what happens in Seattle. I've got a person who I'm very close to, who I was talking with yesterday, a liberal woman who says, of course the anarchism that went on in Seattle was wrong. This particular person, I think, is 100% behind a lot of liberal causes, and that's fine. But at least she has the guts to say the anarchy was very definitely wrong. People were killed. I have to say one other thing regarding that. I'm glad Jenny Durkin is not running for re-election. My personal opinion is she is too good a person to not be able to handle what was going on there. Jim, we got 30 seconds. Wrap it up, please.
So let's just try and look optimistically in 2021. We'll see what happens on January 6th. But I want to say that, there are enough people, I still believe there are enough people in America that believes in America, that believe in our First Amendment rights, that believe in our Constitution, that eventually will come through this. But we have to be very careful with the powerful and the elite that are trying to crush it. And we got to step up. We've got to keep fighting for America.
You definitely have to step up, and that's what we are going to continue doing on the KER Report. 2020 was tough. We all made it through. We're going to make it through 2021, let me tell you. I would guess that when we're doing this next year, probably all of a sudden it's going to be what a wonderful year we had. We got out of it. I really hope that happens. See you later. Happy New Year.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.